Welcome to Longitude Soundbites, where we bring innovative insights from around the world directly to you. Hi, I am Emory McKenzie, and I'll be your host today. I recently completed my master's in geoscience at Rice University, and I went to Georgia Southern University for my undergrad, where I also played football. For this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Brian Cooper, the president of the American Flag Football League. I was curious about the vision for flag football, which is now an Olympic sport. So join me in our conversation about Brian's career, his vision for flag football, and how the sport has expanded its reach internationally. Enjoy listening.
Went to undergrad at Cornell, and then after college, I worked on Capitol Hill for about a year, and then I went back to school and did a joint degree at the Kennedy School at Harvard and Columbia Law School, and then stayed in New York for 10 years. And then my wife and I moved in Houston in 2002.
Were you doing sports law in New York?
Yeah, I started at Proskauer. When I started out, I was working on matters for the NBA, and ATP Tour, NHL, and Major League Soccer. And at the time, Major League Soccer had a relatively large antitrust lawsuit with the Major League Soccer Players Association's case called Frazier versus MLS, which really was a seminal case on determining whether or not a league could, you know, serve as a single entity, which would shield it in some capacities from antitrust sanction. And so I worked on that. And really enjoyed it. Proskauer is nationally known for his sports practice. Then I continued to represent sports clients as an agent, and then came down to Houston, started a firm called Haynes and Boone, and did that for about 6 years, where I was doing non-sports work and sports work as well. Around 2008, got an opportunity to become president of the NBA G League Rio Grande Valley Vipers, and then I was at Rice as a senior associate athletic director and CFO. And then I was director of sports programming at Dish Network in Denver. And then after being more of an executive for about 10 years, I moved back into the private practice. I was a partner at Louis Brisbois, this big LA firm, and led their sports and entertainment efforts there. And then went to the XFL, became president of the Houston Roughnecks. We had a pretty successful start. And then obviously we were hit with COVID, really knocked out most of live sports, and became a partner at Frost Brown Tide in the Houston office and led the sports and entertainment efforts. And then also was a leader of our venture capital practice as well. So I worked with startup companies as a transactional lawyer.
What a career that didn't stop there.
And then, yeah, June in 2023, I left Frost Brown to take the leap again into sports. I've been president of two teams, never been president of a league. And I was really excited about the opportunity to help the American Flag Football League kind of achieve what they're really hoping to do, which is really expand this game. And I think that the upside of the league is just fantastic. So I was really excited to make that leap.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting future for flag football.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How did that opportunity come about?
I had been talking with the founder, Jeff Lewis. I met him in 2021 when I was at Frost Brown, and really was pitching him as a lawyer, you know, the legal work. And we just kind of struck up a conversation. We both went to Cornell, so we had a kind of a commonality in our alma mater, and kind of started having the conversations. And about maybe a year into it, he was talking about restarting the league as a professional league. The league had been operating previously more so like a tournament league, where you had groups of amateur players all come together and they play for a tournament, and ultimately they play to a championship where there's some sort of maybe a cash prize at the end. And that's how the AFFL initially was built. It was built in a way where you also had a group of amateurs going up against a group of retired pros, and that kind of pros versus Joes format was used in 2017 and 2018. And in 2018, they had a game here in Houston at what's now known as Shell Energy Stadium. And really was a great success. They had about 8,000 fans at the game. The NFL Network was the broadcaster for those games, and also in 2017. And then they were able to kind of continue that momentum. And then just like every other league in 2020, live sports were just crushed by the pandemic. And they had to suspend operations for a bit, but then restarted That's about that time when I got to know Jeff and started talking about the professional league. And we just kind of had those conversations and they continued on. And ultimately, I got more enthused about being able to see how they could really build it out and was excited to kind of help them with that step.
So now is it like a season 4 of flag football?
So this is really going to be our inaugural season of a men's professional league. Unlike the previous iterations of the AFFL, this league is a professional league. And so a little bit of backstory about how the AFFL works in flag football. We logistically work with a traditional football field. It's 7-on-7. The field is a traditional field, 120 yards. So, 100 yards to 10-yard end zone. The games are 7-on-7, which is essentially like traditional football. The only people that are missing are the two guards and two tackles. So it's more like watching a skeleton drill in football. Or just, simple 7-on-7 that you'd also do in traditional football. The teams have 12 active players and 3 practice squad players. So there'll be 15 players on each team, and the players will be paid. Players are making anywhere between $20,000 to $25,000 for the time that they'll play in our league, which is a modest salary, but it's when it's competitive, like the Arena League, for example, is slightly less than what the players will make in the UFL. We've got teams in Dallas, Boston, Las Vegas, and Nashville. And so we'll be in those markets. We'll have home games in each of the markets. We've got tickets already on sale. Still talking to a couple of prospective media partners for broadcast, but we expect to have our games broadcast nationally. We launch late April of 24. So we expect this inaugural season to be our good season.
So one thing that does make me excited about this is that the Flag Football League sounds very similar to 7-on-7, and 7-on-7 leagues are becoming a bigger thing amongst high school players.
They very much are. I mean, it's really impressive. One of the things I love about flag football, and there are many things, but the one major thing is what I call the personality of it. And it's kind of I'm using the word not necessarily in the right tone, but I mean, the personal nature of the game, sort of like the NBA, in soccer, where you can, unlike traditional football with helmets and pads, these players won't have helmets and pads. So you can see them, you can see their faces, you can see the talk between the players, you can see the great highlights. And that's what I think is interesting on 7-on-7 in the overtime highlights in those 7-on-7 games, because you can see a player go up for a great catch and then that becomes a viral moment and that player is pretty recognizable. So I think, we're going to have that same push as well, where we can really highlight the great athleticism of our players and do it in a way that are similar, where we can take advantage of social media and viral videos. We've got a real pretty robust right now Instagram following of about 128,000 people at this point. So, and part of that's been built on the flag community, being able to see people that they know and really enjoy watching in those, like in short form content and on those videos.
It is great. I think personality is a great word to use. You get to see a lot more personality amongst the players.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. The NBA really bottled that maybe 30 years ago with Commissioner Stern. They leaned into highlighting the Magic and Bird and Michael Jordan and showing like, hey, really kind of putting the focus more on players and having people get to know them. And I think that's what we're planning on doing with our team as well as, our players, is, getting to know them, right? Getting to see those kind of backstories and where they came from and how they've developed. Those will hopefully all resonate with fans and people who are already interested in the sport and getting interested in the sport.
Yeah. So is there a clear distinction between this amateur sport versus a professional sport?
Yeah, I think the clearest distinction, I teach a sports law class at U of H as well. And just yesterday, our first class, we talked about the difference, the amateurism. So I would just say, the clearest form is that amateurs generally pay to play, right? They pay to play in tournaments. They pay to play in youth leagues. And a pro gets paid to play. And that's kind of the distinction between our past league, the tournament style league, where players paid to kind of have an entry fee to be in a tournament that ultimately may lead to a cash prize, but they weren't professionals. Our players have signed contracts and are professional players under our league. And they're subject to the same standards and contract terms as a pro player. As a pro football player or a pro baseball player, where, particularly like as a professional, you've got additional responsibilities to your team and to the league. So you cannot engage in, dangerous behavior or dangerous activities because you need to protect yourself because you're not being paid to play the sport. Yes, there's certain nice distinctions there, but really the key one is that, that's really the salary and being subject to a contract.
Nice. So the talent pool for these teams, is there a draft?
We didn't have a formal draft this year, but we did have formal tryouts in all four markets. We had about 400 players show up, about 100 in each market over the summer.
A market, you mean area? So like the
Yeah,
ball.
sorry, the markets in the four cities, our four AFFL cities. We
Okay.
started off and had our first tryout in Dallas, and then we moved to Nashville and then Boston and Las Vegas. And in each market, about 100 players were there. And ultimately, that group of 400 got narrowed down to 32, and 32 were initially offered core team contracts, eight in each team. And within those 32 players, 11 of them have United States National Flag Football Team experience. And so we've got really the most elite flag football players on the planet playing in our league, including probably the most recognizable name in flag football is a player named Darryl Doucette, who goes by his nickname is Hoosh. And Hoosh is a legend in the sport. He is the starting quarterback for the United States flag football team. He's a quarterback of the Las Vegas team. He's not a big guy, about 5'7", 140 pounds, but he is really one of the finer football players. You know, his ability to evade tackles, to his speed, it's all really amazing. He really distinguished himself back in the 2018 game, where he caught Lavelle Hawkins, a former NFL wide receiver, right at the goal line. And Lavelle had maybe about a 20 to 25 yard head start on Hoosh, and Hoosh closed the gap and caught him. And you can see that video on YouTube. NFL Films did a 7-minute documentary on the flag football game in Houston, the 2018 Ultimate Final in Houston. And it's really amazing to watch. It happens at around a 5-minute mark, and it is really, again, one of the more astounding plays I've ever seen.
So how did black football become an Olympic sport?
So I think this has been a decades-long group effort by many entities, including, you know, Jeff and the American Flag Football League. The NFL, you know, has been a huge proponent of flag football for the last 10 years through Troy Vincent and his team. They've really worked hard to expand flag football at the youth level, at the prep level, over the last 10, 15 years. Initially, I think there was concern about the safety of the traditional game and that people were looking at flag football as an alternative to that sport. But I think ultimately, what has really been more interesting is that it's just developed into a greater affinity for the sport of football in general. And so, what you really have seen is flag football expanding to youth, flag football expanding internationally, and most importantly, flag football expanding to women's sport. You're seeing a lot more women's prep football in various states like Massachusetts and Nevada, Tennessee, where they've now made it a varsity sport in many states. I think that the world and the IOC and the USOC recognize the emerging strength of the sport, and its inclusion in the Olympics is just going to be fantastic. I think everybody will get to see it. Anyone can play it. I mean, what's also great about it is that you can have a pickup game in your backyard and really enjoy it. But then you see it at an elite level, and it's just so dynamic. Being able to see the athleticism and just the playmaking, there's just so many components to the game that I think ultimately flag football has the ability to really expand that. I was going to say narrative, but that's not really the expand that kind of joy and the feeling internationally. I think as people see the game, they're going to really respond to it. And I think the Olympics is a great way for that to happen.
Yeah. I know for a lot of American families, flag football is like a staple for the, like, say, Thanksgiving dinner. Like after dinner, put together a flag football team and they get to just enjoy the game with their family. So, what is the international reach for flag football?
I think the upside is incredible. Right now, about 20 million people worldwide are now playing it. The game continues to grow in leaps and bounds. I think we've added about 7 million people in the last 10 years alone. It's really taking off. I think internationally, you see it in Central and South America. I had the pleasure of going to a USA football sanctioned tournament last summer in Charlotte, and there were teams from Brazil and Colombia and Japan, and it was really amazing. We had a couple of players from Japan come over and try out for our league during the summer. We had a young man from Great Britain who came over to try out, and one person from Germany. So I think it's like basketball and soccer in the sense that it is easy to pick up It's easy to play. It lends itself to incredible expansion. Just like, you know, you've seen with the soccer and basketball has grown globally in amazing ways over the last 30 years. And I think that in flag football has a significant chance of doing a similar thing over the next few decades internationally.
This makes me excited for flag football's future.
Yeah, I think, you know, the excitement level to me is that just being able to see at youth level and watching young people really get excited about the sport. And now kids have numerous opportunities at the prep level to continue to play football through middle school, through high school. I think people may have thought, well, flag football is a sport for smaller kids and what happens, you know, when they get older, but they continue to play flag football and they continue to love the sport and grow with the sport. And that's one of the greater upsides of the sport going forward is this ability to have people be part of it for years. I think we're extending that timetable. People now can look at it and say, hey, not only can I play in high school, but perhaps I can play in college and ultimately maybe I can play this game professionally. And that is a huge boost for any sport, you know, your ability to continue to play it at the most elite level. I mean, look at esports. That esports allowed players who were skilled players at various games to continue to play and play it either in college or play professionally. That's a big moment for a sport and shows its reach both socially and geographically.
Yeah. I started playing football when I was 5 and ended up playing in college. And one of the big things you hear when you're in college playing football is once this is over, you don't get another chance to play football. But the way you do get that feeling of football back and that competitive feeling of football is through flag football.
Yeah, I think that's what makes people to relate to the game, right? You can continue to play in the game and it allows you to maintain that affinity for the game. I'll tell you one other thing I think that's hopefully going to be important with our league as well is that in building out any kind of entity and league fan engagement is very important. I'm always cognizant of how the teams relate to the community. And I want to make sure our league does the same thing where we have a very reciprocal relationship with our communities, meaning we are out supporting the communities in the same sense that the community would support us.
We hope you enjoyed our episode. Flag football is often the introduction to the game of football for kids, so it's exciting to hear of its growth. Brighton's story has consistently involved sports, so it was a pleasure to hear of the opportunities that sports have created for Brighton. For me, this entire interview created excitement for the future of one of my favorite pastimes.
To view the episode transcript, please visit longitude.site. If you're a college student interested in leading a conversation like this, visit our website longitude.site to submit an interest form or to write to us at podcast@longitude.site. Join us next time for more unique insights on Longitude Soundbites.